Blog Talk Radio.
Let's see. Nelson Mandela. Wait a minute. This
struggle of the history of struggle and group identity it creates have not been limited to American experience. The decades-long fight against the racist apartheid system in South Africa was supported by millions of people in this country too. Jim Crow was America's own apartheid. It is only logical that the sight of black people being treated cruelly in the name of white supremacy would elicit feelings of affinity in this country and around the world.
Nelson Mandela's release after 27 years of imprisonment and his subsequent election as president created a surge of pride and joy among black people everywhere. Unfortunately, we did not truly understand what we were witnessing. These events came about as a result of forces unacknowledged in America, and they also came with a very high price. The name of the Angolan town, Cuito Cunavale, means little to all but a handful of Americans. But it lies at the heart of the story of apartheid's end. At Cuito Cunavale, in 1988, Cuban troops defeated the South African army, and in doing so, sealed apartheid's fate. It is important to know how apartheid ended, lest useless stories about a miraculous change system and a peaceful grandfatherly figure confuse us and warp our consciousness. Mandela was freed because of armed struggle and not out of benevolence. He was also freed because the African National Congress miscalculated and made concessions, which have since resulted in terrible poverty and powerlessness for black people in South Africa. By their own admission, some of his comrades concede that they were unprepared for the determination of the white majority to hold the purse strings, even as they gave up their political power. Now the masses of black South Africans are as poor as they were during the time of political terror. The Sharpeville Massacre of 1960, which galvanized the world against South Africa, was repeated in 2012 when 34 striking miners were killed by police at Marikana. Marikana massacre made a mockery of the hope which millions of people had for the ANC and its political success. Obama's recent visit to South Africa, when the 94-year-old Mandela was hospitalized, created a golden opportunity for analysis and questioning of long-held assumptions about both men. But the irrefutable fact is this: the personal triumphs of these two individuals have not translated into success for black people in either of their countries. The victory of international finance capital wreaks havoc on both sides of the Atlantic Ocean. In the U.S., black people have reached their political and economic low point during the Obama years. The gains won 50 years ago have been reversed, while unemployment, mass incarceration, and Obama-supported austerity measures have all conspired to undo the progress which was so dearly paid for. Obama's visit to Africa as Mandela lay critically ill brought very sincere but very deeply misled people to remember all the wrong things. It isn't true that black people benefit from the political success of certain individuals. It isn't true that role models undo systemic cruelty, or that racism ends because of their presence, or that white people see or treat the masses of black people any differently when one black person reaches a high office. The model and sentiment was built on lies. Mandela fought the good fight for many years and is worthy of respect for that reason alone. But his passing should be a moment to reflect on his mistakes and how they can be avoided by people struggling to break free from injustice. Obama's career is a story of ambition, high cynicism, which met opportunity. There is little to learn from his story except how to spot the next evildoer following in his steps. It is high time that myths were called what they are. They are stories which may help people explain our feelings, but they are stories nonetheless, and they do us no good. And that was by Margaret Crimbley, And that's a Freedom Writer column.
So anyway, interesting though.
And this is the Black
Agenda
Report.
Yeah, I thought that was really kind of interesting.
And that was printed by Global Research.
Yes.
This is a good perspective, I thought, and a clear perspective on things.
Yes. The Pentagon orders a purge of Osama bin Laden's death files from the data bank. Imagine that. I mean, if it wasn't such a fraud, it would be, you know, it's such a farce. The whole bin Laden thing was such a farce. But now the Pentagon is purging, all right, the whole history of this guy. Okay, it says, a new wave of camouflage is underway at the Pentagon and the CIA. The bin Laden death files contained in the Pentagon's data bank have become the object of controversy. Naval Vice Admiral William McRaven has been entrusted in removing these secret military files concerning the May 2001 Navy SEAL raid on Osama bin Laden's
alleged hideout
in Abbottabad, Pakistan, and the Pentagon's data banks. The files of the bin Laden SEAL operation have to be removed to sustain the big lie. Osama was allegedly killed on the orders of the U.S. government, despite ample evidence that he was already dead at the time of the attack. The U.S. government pulled off one of the most audacious stunts of the 21st century, when on May 2nd, 2011, they claimed to have killed Osama bin Laden during the Navy SEAL operation in Abbottabad, Pakistan. The contemptuously sloppy story spun by the U.S. government, parroted without question all by the controlled corporate media, and obligingly swallowed by a largely gullible Western public, was dubious in the extreme. Okay, who was killed? Was it Osama bin Laden or somebody else? Rest in peace, truth will prevail. The files are no longer at the Pentagon. They have been sent to the CIA in violation of the Freedom of Information Act. The White House tacitly acknowledges that the procedure of moving government records was in violation of the federal norms. A draft report by the Pentagon's Inspector General briefly described the secret move, which was directed by the top U.S. Special Operations Commander and Admiral William McRaven. The transfer did not set off alarms within the Obama administration, even though it appears to have the sidestepped rules governing federal records and circumvented the Freedom of Information Act. That's Obama's fault there. He wanted it taken out. And President Barack Obama has pledged to make his administration the most transparent in history.
What a joke.
The CIA said that the documents were handled in a manner consistent with the fact that the operation was conducted under CIA direction. Right? The Pentagon
spokesperson.
And this was Belfast Telegraph reported this July 8th. That was yesterday. The Pentagon spokesperson denied the fact that the removal of these files was to avoid legal requirements of the Freedom of Information Act. But secretly removing the records allowed the Pentagon to tell the Associated Press that it could not find any documents inside the Defense Department that AP had requested more than 2 years ago, and could represent a new strategy for the U.S. government to shield even its most sensitive activities from public scrutiny. That was by the New York Daily News.
According to the official statement, the record transfer from the Pentagon to the CIA has nothing to do with the Freedom of Information. Its objective was, and this is the quote, to protect the names of the personnel involved in the raid, according to the Inspector General's draft report. Weren't they all killed?
They were all killed.
Except
the one guy who managed to write the book. Yeah.
Several members of the SEAL raid are now dead, allegedly due to combat and training accidents. The list of names in the Osama death files is known to U.S. intelligence, but not to the broader public, nor to family members. According to the New York Times, 79 commandos and a dog were involved in the raid that killed Osama bin Laden, though other reports peg the number at approximately 24. Since the raid, SEAL Team 6, the team that conducted the bin Laden raid, has lost several members due to combat and training accidents, though none of them has been confirmed as being specifically part of the bin Laden raid. The largest loss to the team took place in April 2011, when Taliban fighters shot down a U.S. helicopter and killed 22 members of SEAL Team 6, along with 16 other U.S. troops. None of those SEALs, however, was reported to have worked on the Bin Laden raid. Separately, the before
its news piece
reference, Commander Job W. Price, who committed suicide in December 2012, as being another person connected to the Bin Laden raid who has died. The accusation doesn't hold up because Price was reportedly part of the SEAL Team 4, not 6, and was not part of the Bin Laden raid. The most recent death to SEAL Team 6 took place on March 28th when Special Warfare Operations Chief Brett D. Shattle was killed in a parachute training accident when he collided in midair with another SEAL over the Arizona desert. He was later identified as being part of Team 6, though it's unclear if he was actually assigned to the Bin Laden mission. The problem with completely confirming or disproving the accusation that so many SEAL Team Member 6 have died is that the U.S. military typically does not disclose which units Special Forces members work on, even after their death. In interviews with the MSN News, spokespeople at the U.S. Navy, Pentagon, and Special Operations Command each refused to comment on the Before It's News article or the claim that 25 members of the Bin Laden raid team have died.
The members of SEAL Team 6 know the untold truth, and they are forbidden to reveal it. Many credible commentators, including respected intelligence analysts and heads of state, had claimed years before 2011 that Bin Laden was dead. And several members of SEAL Team 6 which carried out the attack are now dead. The Osama legend is now classified, buried in Osama death files, stored in the archives of the CIA. Only the CIA knows the names of the surviving members of the SEAL team involved in the May 2011 Osama Abbottabad raid.
Yep.
So there you go, folks. it's unbelievable. I have something else I just saw here. A judge denies the request for release of Bin Laden's death pictures. A federal judge has denied a request by Judicial Watch for the government to release photographs and video of Osama Bin Laden taken during or after the Special Forces raid. Why is that? The guy's dead, right?
Uh-huh.
That's because there are no pictures. And a guy has been dead for 10 years.
Or more.
Okay, and then another... I'm sorry. Announcement of Osama's death fuels the Osama bin Laden mythology. And as U.S.-British death tolls rise, Pentagon orders 14,000 National Guard troops to Iraq. So anyway, this has all been fun. But this is what's happening, guys. And for anybody who's been following the Snowden thing...
I think most Americans have followed that.
I think so. But this is a fascinating article that came up today. And it's called... it's by Global Research again. And they've been doing a lot of good research lately. But this says U.S. escalates threats against government asylum for Snowden, right? And this was written yesterday. Top officials escalated their threats over the weekend against any government that grants asylum to Edward Snowden. The source of leaks detailing illegal government surveillance programs directed at the population of the United States and the entire world. Now, on Friday, Venezuelan President Nicolas Maduro said that the country would offer Snowden humanitarian asylum, and the leaders of Nicaragua and Bolivia, both indicated that Snowden would receive asylum in those countries as well. And the statements came in the wake of the forced grounding of Bolivian President Evo Morales' plane last week under suspicions that Snowden may have been on board. And, I mean, that would be like, you know, grounding Air Force One.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And an anonymous State Department official said over the weekend, "There is not a country in the hemisphere whose government does not understand our position at this point. The official intellectuals asserted that granting Snowden asylum would put relations in a very bad place for a long time to come. The official continued, if someone thinks things would go away, it won't be the case. But, you know, what makes me laugh is that... I think Hugo Chavez would give the finger to this guy, to these guys, and that's why I believe the Venezuelan guy is doing it.
Well, we'll see if he gets there. Representatives of both the Democrats and Republicans jumped in with threats. Clearly, such acceptance of Snowden to any country is going to put them directly against the United States, and they need to know that, Senator Robert Menendez, Democrat of New Jersey, declared on NBC's Meet the Press Sunday. Congressman Mike Rogers, the Republican head of the House Intelligence Committee, told CNN that the U.S. should consider responding to asylum-granting governments with economic sanctions. So it's to send a very clear message that we won't put up with this kind of behavior. What are we, the world's father?
Yeah, right.
These threats are...
The world's bully as well.
Bully. These threats are in line with the international campaign of thuggery and intimidations launched by the Obama administration in response to the revelations of secret programs that involved the collection of communications of hundreds of millions of people all over the world. Regarding the downing of Morales' plane, more information has emerged, making clear that the U.S. was behind that action. Latin American media have reported that a U.S. diplomat spread rumors that Snowden was on board the flight, prompting the efforts to force a landing. The Austrian newspaper Die Presse reported that U.S. Ambassador to Austria, William Iacho, claimed with great certainty that Edward Snowden was on board. Maduro reported that he was personally informed by a European minister that it was the CIA that gave the order to the air traffic authorities, which gave the alert that Snowden was going in the plane. While the details surrounding the forced landing remain unclear, it is a blatant violation of international law. The downing of Morales' plane makes clear that Snowden... the downing of Morales' plane makes clear that Snowden will face enormous obstacles as he attempts to travel to any asylum country, granting country, even if he receives approval from its government. If he accepts asylum in Venezuela, Snowden will still need to get there from his current location in the Russian airport. The commercial flight from Moscow to Venezuela stops in Cuba and passes through European airspace. It would thus be in danger of being forced to land by European governments acting at the behest of the United States. For its part, Russia is pushing for Snowden to leave quickly. Prominent Russian parliamentarian Alexei Pushkov, who is very close to the Kremlin, tweeted Sunday, Venezuela is waiting for an answer from Snowden. This, perhaps, is his last chance to receive political asylum. He needs to choose a place to go, said Russian Deputy Foreign Minister Sergei Ryabkov. Maduro said late Sunday night that Snowden has until today to contact the Venezuelan government in response to the asylum offer.
Russia has made clear that it is unwilling to sour relations with Washington over the issue, and that Snowden would have to accept censorship and an end to his exposures of mass spying as a condition for staying in Russia. Well, Russian President Vladimir Putin offered asylum to the whistleblower, but Snowden declined after Putin demanded that he cease harming our American partners. Moreover, any asylum granted from Venezuela or any other Latin American country must be seen highly conditional. Latin American heads of state are using the occasion to burnish their image as opponents of U.S. imperialism. However, all these countries are heavily susceptible to U.S. pressure and dependent on the U.S. economy. In spite of his tough talk, Maduro has made clear that he wants to improve relations with the United States. At the same time, the leader of the main opposition party in Venezuela, Enrique Capriles, has denounced the offer of asylum. So Nicaraguan President Daniel Ortega is offered asylum, but it was qualified with the phrase, if circumstances permit. And political analyst Carlos Fernando Chamorro told the Wall Street Journal, it is an ambiguous statement that is consistent with his rhetoric of provoking the U.S. and in practice it, doing everything to maintain good relations. A former Nicaraguan official close to Ortega expressed similar views, saying, it is his way of telling the Americans, I was asked to do this, but I am not going to do it. I know him. It is a way that he can show off his revolutionary credentials, but he won't do anything in the end. And Ecuador, too, has indicated that it would consider asylum, but the country carried out an abrupt about-face after pressure from the U.S. Oh, right. The Ecuadorian government initially granted Snowden a travel document from Hong Kong to Moscow, but this was later rescinded and declared a mistake. It has since said that Snowden would have to travel to Ecuador first before any asylum request was considered. And for their part, every European government has refused Snowden's petition for asylum, and the same European regime that collaborated
with
the U.S. and the illegal downing of Morales' flight have, on countless occasions, allowed the CIA to use their airspace for extraordinary rendition or prisoners to black sites to be tortured. And these governments have established their own mass spying programs and functions, along with U.S. government, as political machines in defense of the ultra-wealthy, dominant banks and corporations. So, you know, Snowden is still screwed, man. He still doesn't know, you know. But I think Venezuela is probably the best he's got, you know.
Mm-hmm.
He can get there.
If he can get there.
I don't know. He has too many problems, but I don't know. I wouldn't want to be in his shoes right now.
He's a very brave man.
Now, back to something more fun. 72% of Americans believe the NSA is blackmailing judges and members of Congress.
Huh.
I believe that. I'm one of those 72%. Aren't you?
Probably. Congress could be blackmailed easily.
They
are so corrupt.
And the Supreme Court, too. Oh, God. These guys are as corrupt as hell. Well, I mean, NSA, we'll just leak that you've been screwing,
your
brother or something. We have evidence to show that.
Yeah, or you're gay, cheating on your wife, multiple wives.
But that wouldn't hurt them. Now, Alito, I think Alito is probably gay, but, you know, I don't think that would hurt him anymore because they just passed whatever.
It's more publicly acceptable.
Shortly after reports surfaced in early June that the NSA had been spying on Americans at home, President Obama attempted to put us at ease, telling us that the government is not listening to your phone calls. Well, that, of course, has turned out to be a blatant lie, but one in which the president inadvertently gave away himself. In nearly the same breath, he tried to convince us that his NSA isn't monitoring our phone calls and other forms of electronic communication. The president defended the agency, saying his administration needed to strike a balance between protecting our constitutional rights to privacy and protecting the country.
Based on what we now know, balanced to this president and a number of lawmakers who sees no issues with NASA's surveillance of America is completely gutting of the Fourth Amendment. Is a complete gutting of the Fourth Amendment. In any case, most Americans weren't fooled by the BS doublespeak or the attempt at getting us to sign off on serial violations of the Fourth Amendment for the most flimsy reasons. What's more, according to a new Rasmussen survey, nearly three-quarters of Americans believe the NSA has been turned loose on government itself, using information it has gathered on judges, members of Congress, and other high-ranking officials to blackmail them. Americans aren't buying what our elected leaders and the bureaucrats are selling. The latest Rasmussen report, National Telephone Survey, finds that 72% of likely U.S. voters think it is at least somewhat likely that NSA has monitored the private communications of Congress, military leaders, judges, said the survey. That includes 45% who believe it is very likely. That perception is bipartisan, Rasmussen noted. Most Republicans, Democrats, and unaffiliated voters all think the NSA is likely to have monitored those and other branches of the government. Most unaffiliated voters, 56%, and those in the GOP, 50%, consider it very likely. 32% of those in President Obama's party share that view. So most people think that the government's listening, NSA.
Granted,
just because most Americans believe the NSA has done this doesn't make it true, but the way our elected leaders, as well as the unelected bureaucrats, whose decisions directly affect our lives and our freedoms, lie to us on a regular basis. Any denials by Obama, Director of National Intelligence, James Clapper, or any other high-ranking administration official would fall on deaf ears.
We're not just buying what our leaders are selling anymore, as evidenced by some aspects of the Rasmussen survey. Just 30% trust the president and the executive branch. 30%. That's worse than Bush.
Yeah.
Bush was about
35,
something like that. He was probably around 20 when he left office. But the executive branch, Congress, and federal judges to make sure the surveillance program is abiding by the Constitution. They don't trust anybody. And Rasmussen said, despite the president's assurance that nobody is listening to your telephone calls, 68% believe it is likely that government agencies are listening in on private conversations of American citizens. And says Rasmussen himself in his new weekly newspaper column, none of the public players come off looking great in the NSA story, but there is now an opportunity for a healthy debate on the issue. It's not partisan. President Obama and former Vice President Dick Cheney are on the same side. And the nation needs a serious discussion about what kind of oversight and protection is needed to honor the Constitution while still effectively fighting the terrorists who want to end our way of life. Yeah, right.
Well, you know who wants to end your way of life.
Yeah, it's Obama. It's Obama and the Congress and Goldman Sachs and the Rothschilds and all the banking bastards and J.P. Morgan and, everybody. These are the guys that are trying to kill you.
They want to end the Americans.
Corporatism is all they care about. Fascism. The corporate fascism. That's what it's all about.
Yeah.
Well, listen. Monitoring Barack Obama. Even more damning evidence came from former Bush administration intelligence analyst Russ Tice, who turned whistleblower recently to claim in no uncertain terms that the NSA indeed has spied on some of the government's most powerful people and has done so for years. That includes Barack Obama. Here's the big one. This was in the summer of 2004. One of the papers that I held in my hand was a wiretap, a bunch of numbers associated with 40-something-year-old wannabe senator for Illinois, who wouldn't happen to know where that guy lives right now, would you? It's a big White House in Washington, D.C., That's who they went after, and that's the President of the United States now. In an interview with Sybil Edmonds, a former FBI staffer and National Security Whistleblower Coalition founder, Tice called the NSA a rogue agency that has J. Edgar Hoover capabilities at a monstrous scale on steroids. And for the looks of the latest surveys, most Americans believe Tice. So there you go, guys.
Yeah, why don't we...
I gotta play some music. I'm a little fucked out here. So we'll do that. And we'll be right back afterwards.
And then we'll be back in a few minutes, folks. So I hope you enjoy. I don't know what Leo's gonna play. But something good, I'm sure.
I like this song.
Thank you.
diminish her problem, but...
All right, we're back, folks. And Lila and I are just discussing the
lousy mainstream media.
The lousy mainstream media. Well, it's just unbelievable how bad it is. But, hey, you know, that's what we're here for. That's why you're listening to us. And, you know, it's really interesting to me. And Lila's going to read one on...
John Corzine.
Yeah,
remember him, folks?
Oh, yeah, okay.
Yeah.
John Corzine, the former governor of New Jersey and former CEO of Goldman Sachs and former this and former that, and the guy who stole $1.4 billion from his investors from Global Investments while he was the CEO of that.
And he couldn't remember what happened to it.
And he is now...
enjoying the fruits of his labor.
So let's
this is from the Trenches World Report.com. If you were a billionaire, former Goldman Sachs CEO, ex-governor, and one of Obama's biggest donors, and steal $1.2 billion directly from the accounts of your customers and cover up that theft, then you are not a criminal. If you reveal the unconstitutional spying on all American citizens by the government, you are a traitor and face life imprisonment. This is your American Republic in a nutshell. Anyone that doesn't believe we are a corporate fascist oligarchy run by the ultra-wealthy for the benefit of the ultra-wealthy just isn't thinking. And the beat goes on. There will be no criminal charges for the former New Jersey Governor John Corzine over the use of customer funds leading up to the collapse of MF Global. The criminal probe into whether there was wrongdoing on the part of Corzine by the Department of Justice will now be dropped due to lack of evidence, said a report in the New York Post, citing a person with knowledge of the matter. But the former CEO of Goldman Sachs is not out of the woods. Corzine is facing civil charges by the Commodities Future Trading Commission for illegally using customer funds in the last few days of MF Global to keep the company afloat. The firm's former assistant treasurer, Edith O'Brien, is also caught up in the scandal and charged by the CFTC for making the transfers. Ultimately, Corzine was charged by the regulator for failure to segregate and misuse of customer funds and failure to supervise diligently. O'Brien was charged with one count of failure to segregate and misuse of customer funds. To support the allegations, the CFTC used a recorded telephone conversation to support their charges that Corzine was fully aware of the transfers. Both Corzine and O'Brien have denied any wrongdoing. Yeah. What a surprise.
Yeah, isn't that amazing? It's like totally blow you away. Now, here's something that's going to really blow you away. I don't know. I just, when I read this, it just blew me away. Because we read last week about about Obama's birth certificate being proven to be a complete fraud by Ohio and Arizona. And but this one is a little more damning even than that, because this one deals with Obama's, this is from Red Flag, and it says, developing, whistleblower comes forward and attests to attorney that Obama's financial aid state his citizenship is Indonesian. Aid given to Obama as a foreign student, right? Now, it states that whistleblower from the Higher Education Services Corporation in Albany, New York, came forward and advised attorney Orle Tates that she personally reviewed Barack Obama's financial aid information, which stated that financial aid was given to Obama as a foreign student and as a citizen of Indonesia. Additionally, Obama failed to submit the appellee brief in Tate versus Obama, Feinstein, Emkin. This is an appeal which was reinstated by the chief judge of the 4th District Court of Appeal, Kathleen O'Leary. Appellant Tate filed her appellate's brief. Appellees failed to file an appellee's brief, and they were given additional 15 days, and they failed again. Well, Attorney Tate submitted a notice of failure by appellees to file an appellee's brief and provided the court with this additional information. As part of the appeals revolve around the decision of the Superior Court, Charles Marginis, to rule in favor of the Occidental College and deny a motion to compel production of a redacted college registration for Obama in light of over 100 pages of records showing Obama to be a citizen of Indonesia using forged and fraudulently obtained IDs. Imagine that. And they have more from the law.
Well, they obviously didn't take his money. They let him continue with school there.
Yeah.
So he had forged IDs. Did they do anything about it?
I guess not. It says read more via the law offices of Jorge Tez. And I'm going to see if I can go there.
I went there.
Was there anything there?
No.
Okay.
No. It didn't have anything.
So just so you know, guys.
But my question is, why did they continue to finance his career?
Because they were told to. Okay, his mother was CIA.
Yeah.
You know, and that's why he got
groomed for all these.
He got groomed, right? And his mother was a CIA operative. You know, and he was groomed and groomed and groomed, I guess. What surprises me is, I mean, of all the millions of black guys there were in this country who could have benefited
right. from some
why
financial
this, why
aid.
This guy? Or no, could have been a better president. Could have been president. Okay, why did they choose this guy? What the hell credentials does this guy got? You know, what is he, the resurrection of Tutankhamun or something? Or you know, what? You know.
He's a great liar.
Well, not a great liar, but, you know, for some reason, you know, this guy was taken under the wing by Kissinger.
Uh-huh.
Okay, Kissinger got him a job in Chicago as the community organizer, and Brzezinski and he got him into the Harvard Law School, also got him a job as the editor of the Harvard Law Review, right? And so he was picked and chosen and groomed, and for some reason, and he wasn't even an American citizen. And then they gave him some phony baloney ID and birth certificate and everything else. Not that, you know, you think that
they gave him to the Democratic Party.
Yeah. Amazing.
All wrapped up and ready to go.
Yeah. But anyway, Monsanto's GMO policy is affecting all levels of government. I think this is an interesting article. I mean, Monsanto was given immunity, just as all the drug companies have been given immunity.
For all their wrongdoing.
For vaccines and stuff. I mean, why do they allow that? I don't know. It's just genocide. It's what it is. You know? Genocide.
And they're making a lot of money.
Well, they're making a lot of money, but it's also a way to kill off the population. And that's what their plan was all along.
Well, they have some graphics, which unfortunately we can't show you.
We can read this. From the U.S. Department of Agriculture to the foreign policies, Congress, state governments,
elections
Congress, state governments, election, and the courts, the feverish politics of genetically modified foods have infected decision-making and dramatically tilted policies toward the desires of Monsanto and the biotech industry. Candidate Barack Obama in 2008 promised change. However, when he became president, when he came to Washington, he appointed former Iowa Congressman Tom Vilsack as USDA Secretary. The one-time award-winning biotech governor of the year has presided over a rapid rollout of new GMO crops and foods. Changes he implemented included a series of agency-adjusted adjustments designed to speed up the approval process for GMOs. And under Vilsack's watch, The agency has never denied the approval of one GMO crop.
Yes, the USDA also brought more attention to the National Organic Program. Professional, knowledgeable management, more staffing, more resources. But it's small potatoes compared to the attention afforded biotech. And Vilsack's team has pushed hard for the organic community to swallow a policy of coexistence. The strange view that pollen and DNA recognize fence rows, that rain, winds, and birds and insects and other natural forces will refrain from carrying GMO contaminants to non-GMO plants and crops.
Millions of Americans are suspicious of GMO foods for assorted health and environmental reasons. Polling conducted last year by the Melman Group indicated that nearly 90% of Americans would like GMO foods labeled, so they can make a choice about what kinds of foods they purchase in the marketplace, and 60 other countries require such labeling.
But Vilsack says no, telling the Farm Bureau at the annual meeting in January, "I know of no health reason connected to GMOs that would require labeling under our current
philosophy.
Labeling philosophy." What an ass.
What an ass wipe. And yes, help us speak truth to power and donate that you can afford to support Nation of Change.
Monsanto and the biotech industry allies spent mightily to narrowly defeat last November's state referendum calling for the labeling of GMO foods sold in California. While labeling advocates decried the misleading and deceptive advertising conducted against the referendum, they were unable to weather the deluge of dollars. Still, the seeds of discontent are spreading. Washington state voters will have a labeling referendum on the ballot later in 2013. Vermont has passed GMO labeling legislation. Connecticut Senate overwhelmingly did
yeah,
so.
Yeah, we haven't heard any more about that either, and I don't know if our Dick Wick governor, signed that bill. All right.
I don't know
if he did. And nearly 20 other state legislators have similar proposals.
Maine also has one.
Yeah.
To try to oppose the state by state that is unsustainable, says Kathy Enright, the executive vice president for food and agriculture for the biotechnology industry organization, of which Monsanto, DuPont, and Dow Chemical are members.
Seeking to douse the prairie fire, a Monsanto, which spreads about $6 million annually on lobbying, and its allies are working the fields in Washington, D.C., their target. I can't believe they probably spend more like $6 billion on lobbying. The nation's reauthorization of the Farm Bill, currently winding its way through the House as of this writing, is amended. As amendment attached to the House Agriculture Committee version, authored by Representative Steve King, Republican of Iowa, would strip the rights of states to enact labeling laws. Jesus. The Farm Bill is an essential piece of national legislation that is reauthorized every 5 years. Once an item gets in the bill, it becomes very difficult to remove. The House and Senate will reconcile differences in their bill, but it is far from certain that either will consider the amputation of state GMOs labeling rights as a deal breaker. Since this was written, the Farm Bill failed to pass the U.S. House. Monsanto and their allies also prevailed in a vote in the Senate on an amendment by Bernie Sanders, who wanted to make it clear that states have the authority to require the labeling of food produced through genetically engineering. Sanders' amendment failed.
Well, some of the no voters in the Senate may have come from officials who believe that a national level regulation is more appropriate. The effort to have the Food and Drug Administration do just that is mired axle deep in the muck. The FDA has already said that genetic modification does not materially change the food. Yeah, right.
It actually attacks your DNA now, they're saying.
But when the deadline passed last year for the agencies to respond to a petition requiring GMO food labeling, a petition that contains signatures of well over 1 million citizens, their response was that they needed more time to study the matter. 14 more months have since passed. And just so no stone goes unturned, Monsanto is actively pushing state-level legislation in Oregon and elsewhere to override any labeling laws passed by country and county and municipal governments.
Suppression of dissent in the fertile ground of Washington, D.C., yielded another reward for Monsanto when they snuck a policy rider into an essential appropriations bill earlier this year, dubbed the Monsanto Protection Act. It swatted down the ability of Monsanto's pesky critics to use judicial review as a brake on questionable regulatory decisions. It allows full speed ahead on the unrestricted sale and planting of genetically modified seeds, even when a court finds that they were not properly examined for their impact on farmers, the environment, and human health. Senator Roy Blunt of Missouri, Republican of Missouri, from Monsanto's home state of Missouri, authored the controversial rider and then blocked efforts by Senator John Tester and Jeff Merkley to remove it from the critical governmental operations funding bill. The guy
is such a sellout. These bastards will poison their own families. They'll poison themselves. All right, to kiss Monsanto's ass. I mean, I don't understand these guys. What kind of people and monsters are these criminals? Testers later told a reporter, not only does this ignore the constitutional idea of separation of powers, but it also lets genetically modified crops take hold across this country, even when the judge finds it violates the law. He added that giant multinational agribusiness corporations are treating farmers as serfs. And this article goes on for a ways, but, you know, there's one more I wanted to bring up that before we end tonight.
So tell the folks at home where they could get this article.
Yeah, you can go to this article on Nation of Change, okay? .com. Nation of Change is it's a good website, and it talks about these matters.
Monsanto's GMO policy infecting all levels of government.
Right. Nation of Change. So, but I want to go before we end tonight. I wanted to bring up this one here.
Toxic ingredients and unsafe food items. BPA, a synthetic chemical used to make plastic drinking bottles, baby bottles, and storage containers. I think there's been an alert on that.
Well, it's still there. We're still drinking. Right now, actually, I hate to admit it, but I'm drinking from a plastic
bottle. Yeah, but that doesn't have BPA in it.
How do you know?
Because that's been...
They've eliminated
a lot of that. Increasing number of countries are banning the sale and or cultivation of GM crops. Some of the GM crops are engineered to produce their own pesticides, and research has shown that the genes are passed on to humans, even down to several generations after consumption. Other crops are engineered to withstand heavy applications of the toxic pesticide Roundup. Thanks in part to GM engineering, U.S. produce contains serious levels of pesticides as well as herbicides such as Roundup and other glyphosate. Researchers in Europe have found that the weed killer Roundup has serious toxic effects due to inert ingredients that amplify the toxicity of Roundup's active ingredient glyphosate. As a result, Roundup is banned in nearly every European country.
Due to growth stimulators such as rectofine, as well as antibiotics, which are added to our meats, over 160 countries say no to U.S. meats. Holy crap. And chemical fertilizers are yet another widespread problem. From 1990 to 1995, 600 different companies, 44 states, sent a whopping 270 million pounds of toxic waste to both fertilizer companies and farms. The waste was not treated to remove toxic substances, including arsenic and dioxins. Sadly, greed and cash are kings in the U.S., and our government is too often for sale to the highest bidder. This explains why we have a Monsanto insider over our food safety, much like we have a Merck insider over our medicines.
Oh.
Isn't that disgusting?
It makes me feel so sick.
I mean, it's like we're doomed. We're doomed. And, you know, as much as I hate to say this, I mean, you know, this show might be listened to 1,000 people, you know, might listen to this program, but it's like, maybe they'll get it, but, I mean, all the people out there that, you know, and maybe this article was possibly read by that many people, you know, and it's just, you know, that's it.
People
don't know what they're eating. You're out there eating mac and cheese and out there eating all the crap and the crap. Oh, my God. There was another article we don't have time to do, but I want to tell you that less than 2% of beef is in fast food hamburgers.
What's in there?
All kinds of fillers and crap, you know. And but less than 2%, especially in your McDonald's hamburger.
Oh, I'm so surprised, I have to say.
Isn't that disgusting? Yeah, it's really disgusting. But anyway.
So, folks, think about what you eat before you eat it.
And with that, we're going to say good night. We're going to say thank you. There's another article I wish you'd go to if you get a chance. A boy recovers from autism by removing dairy and gluten from his diet. There's also strong evidence links vaccines to autism. But it's important that you note that this kid has a video on it, too. The kid was cured of his autism.
Oh,
by,
good.
Yeah.
Gluten allergies can cause a lot of swelling.
Yeah, boys recover from autism by removing dairy and gluten. Okay, from his diet. And this is from Waking Times, so you can check this out. WakingTimes.com. It's their front page article. Check it out. Right? If you know of anyone or your own kids are suffering from autism, or you know.
Doesn't hurt to try to eliminate certain foods from your diet.
Okay. So I want to thank everybody who joined us tonight.
Thanks for listening.
And we thank you.
And I hope you have a great night.
Yeah, and join us tomorrow night. Good night, everyone.